All right, thanks very much for sitting in this morning. My name is Chris Graham, and as you can see from my title slide, I'm going to be talking about nitrogen flows in manured agroecosystems. Specifically, I'm going to be talking about denitrification and, to a lesser extent, nitrification. And finally, I'll present two pretty short studies, the first being sort of the motivation for the second, and which leads to a nice segue between the two. So let's get started. So roughly, the United States, 60 million acres of arable land receives manure nitrogen inputs. This comes from an annual production of 4 to 16 tons per animal, and this represents roughly 38% of total nitrogen inputs to the soil each year. The difficulty in managing manure nitrogen particularly is that the nitrogen content is highly variable, with total land content ranging from less than 1% to greater than 6%. And finally, the partition between organic and inorganic forms is very inconsistent. Carbon content, or actually I should say carbon quality is similarly variable, but generally is supplied in high amounts in manure. The CDN ratio generally ranges from 6 to 20. And so the disposal issue for many farmers is literally a very large concern. And so over-application combined with generally low nutrient use efficiency in many field crops creates conditions conducive for significant off-field nitrogen losses through denitrification, leaching, and volatilization primarily. There's a lot of talk always about the skyrocketing inputs, this blue line here, of synthetic fertilizer use after World War II, but less attention is paid to the fact that manure actually kept pace during the same time. Between 1960 and 2000, the FAO estimated that the number of chickens increased by 281%, pigs by 124%, goats by 107%, and cattle by 43%. And this amounts to roughly 140 teragrams of manure nitrogen going into the soil each year, which in more familiar terms is 140 billion kilograms. Additionally, per capita consumption of meat is expected to increase by another 40% by 2030. And so these trends are expected to increase. With respect to nitrous oxide, Eric Davidson of the Woods Hole Institute estimated that roughly 2% of manure nitrogen is transformed into nitrous oxide each year. That's this line here, this trend increasing steadily. And so finally, to begin with, we wanted to look at just what is the impact of manure management on nitrous oxide emissions. And so to test this, we took soils from the same soil series. Textually, it's a silt loam, and the only difference between the soils is that one had received manure, a history of manure management. The other was a traditional rotation with receiving synthetic fertilizers. And we wanted to look at the denitrification potential between the two, and finally the molar ratio. And so to do this, with the soils were homogenized and packed to a bulk density of 1.2 in repack cores. Water-filled pore space was maintained at 80%, and the cores were incubated at 30 degrees Celsius for 168 hours. These values were chosen primarily because we thought they approached the sort of optimal levels for N2O expression. And finally, to swamp out some of the indigenous differences in the nitrate pools between manured and non-manured soils, we used isotopically labeled or enriched potassium nitrate, and we added it at incrementally increasing rates of 0, 50, 100, and 200 kilograms per hectare. So the results are fairly predictable in that NTO emissions increased with increasing fertilizer, as you might expect. However, when you combine with the image on the, or the graph on the right, when you combine total denitrification, the picture is a bit more muddled, primarily because the N2 emissions were extremely inconsistent, and fertilizer was no longer a significant predictor of total emissions. In the manured soils, similar trend. However, the important thing to note is the difference in the y-axis. At each respective fertilizer rate, there was emissions were roughly a factor of two to four. Greater in these manured soils relative to the non-manured soils. And finally, this is the molar ratio. So this expresses the amount of N2O relative to the total amount of denitrification. And as this sort of highlights the effect that oxidizable carbon has on nitrous oxide emissions. There's been a lot of talk about nonlinear response to emission response to increasing fertilizer rates, and this figure supports that. It also shows a bit about how the molar ratio appears to increase nonlinearly or exponentially as you increase fertilizer, which suggests a sort of a decoupling between N2O and N2 emissions in these soils. So, in total, it was roughly 10% of the emissions from non-manured soils were just about 10% as much as N2O from the manured soils. Within the non-manured soils, 10% again of these emissions was measured as N2O, whereas in the manured soils, N2O emissions were roughly 35%. And finally, at optimal conditions, N2O represented roughly, it was emitted approximately 3% of total fertilizer applications was emitted as N2O in the manured soils, while just it was an order of magnitude lower in the non-manured soils. So moving on, we wanted to look at some mitigation potentials, and we looked specifically at scavenger cover crops to investigate whether these crops could sort of soak up some of that excess nitrogen that you often find after harvest in heavily manured systems. And there are a couple other things we were looking at. First, with respect to the more temperate climates of the Northeast, we wanted to look and see, can we establish crops that can affect the soil profile and with the onset of colder weather? And finally, how would this change the temporal dynamics? And specifically, we wanted to look at the spring when you have temperatures increasing and soil moisture content is increasing as well, which is in the literature is a very volatile time for nitrous oxide emissions in arable lands. So we choose two popular cover crops in the Northeast, so winter rye and oats. And as opposed to leguminous cover crops, these grasses develop a fairly rapid rooting system that's able to mine the soils. And they maintain relative productivity into the cooler conditions of the fall. The important difference between the two is that winter rye is much more winter hardy, and it will reestablish as temperatures increase in the spring, whereas oats winter kill, so they return their nutrients and biomass to the soil with the onset of winter. So we monitored dynamics. Primarily, we monitored leaching, nitrate leaching, and nitrous oxide emissions throughout the winter, and as I said, a focus on the spring. The lysimeter nitrate data was measured using tension lysimeters, and we installed them at 55 centimeters. This was assumed to be outside of the effective rooting depth, and we measured N2O with a slight intervention in that we took intact cores, basically at the beginning, middle, and end of spring. And we simulated a heavy rainfall on the cores to try to get maximum expression of N2O between the treatments. And after this rainfall, they were incubated for 96 hours at the prevailing ambient temperatures. So these are the longitudinal profiles of the emissions, starting with the top left. It's difficult to pick out the treatment difference or the treatment lines. But starting with the top left and going clockwise is early spring. In fact, rye and oats had higher average emissions over a control plot. However, these weren't statistically significant. But as you saw, as you move into the middle and late spring, the trend was with decreasing rye emissions, roughly 50 to 60% less than the oats and the fallow plots. And finally, again, the similar treatment or similar effects in the late spring with decreasing emissions in the rye plots, and oats showed no improvements over in emissions over the control plots, and in fact, most of the time had higher average emissions. So the patterns in nitrous oxide emissions are fairly well explained by the pattern in the rhizosphere nitrate throughout this period. As you can see from the first early spring, these box plots show that roughly equal nitrate levels within the soil there. As you move into the mid-spring, rye nitrate is significantly decreased, and that's the period about the time when rye starts taking up much more nitrate in the soil. And finally, it rebounds somewhat in the late spring, but the emission patterns stay the same. The only significant treatment differences, however, were in that mid-spring period during roughly the sort of maximum nitrogen uptake. And so, interestingly, we were surprised at these data. The leachate collected, again, the rye is the dark, the black bar, very low, extremely decreased nitrate leaching, roughly 90% over the control in oat plots. And oats showed no reductions really in nitrate leaching throughout this period, and three of the five sample periods exceeded the maximum contaminant levels set by the EPA. So sort of to conclude, the denitrification data is extremely variable, and rye tended to have lower emissions on average during as the spring season progressed. However, the only statistically significant period was during the middle period, where during this maximum in uptake, nitrate leaching also was similarly reduced compared to the oats or the fallow. And finally, we found little treatment effects with oats in the spring period over the fallow. So, and just to conclude, I think I'm running behind, but 50% of agricultural emissions of N2O are attributed to livestock production systems. And it's largely affected by nitrate content and labile carbon, which these are proximal drivers that are found in high levels in manure treatments. And so this is a continuous concern for off-field nitrogen losses. Cover crops can be a potential mitigation to environmental factors, and in this case, rye performed very well in that very volatile spring period. However, should note that it's just this is one period throughout the year, and so numbers will certainly change as you look at the rest of the season. So there are a number of environmental and economic considerations that must be taken into place. And so with that, I'd like to just acknowledge the funding from the Northeast SARE, and finally, I'd be happy to take any questions if there are any. It's generally just slurry applied broadcast, and so it's usually in the fall. So hadn't received fresh emission supplies in the spring period. In this case, in the cover crops experiment, as far as carbon levels, we didn't really have great carbon measurements. We used active carbon, which didn't seem to correlate very well. So the patterns seem to suggest that with the nitrate levels. In this case, this was in the cover crops. That was only manure. We didn't use a non-manured check, and so there it was just the manured soils in the cover crops. And so presumably the nitrate had been taken up by the rye, as opposed to sitting labile in the soil.